Vinay, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Nothing much.
Woke
just
up,
waiting for
woke
Grant
up a
here.
fan of a championship team today.
Bro, tell me about it, man. How does that feel?
Feels great. Parade inside Arlington. Yeah.
What better city to have a parade in? And what better guest to have on Mavs Film Room Spaces other than the great Grant Avsett? Grant, appreciate you joining, man. How's it going?
You're going to have to bring him up as a speaker, G.
Oh, yeah, that's right. My fault. Okay, there we go. Grant, what's up, man? How's it going?
Pretty good. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Grant, thanks for joining, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I look forward to talking about the Mavs for sure.
Are you in Denver right now?
I am in Denver, yeah.
How's that?
Well, it's good. It's better to be there the day before than the day of, like, the shoot-arounds and everything. That's little far of an airport to get to the
Yeah, game. It is, yeah. It is.
How's traveling been? Because I know last year was kind of the first year you were traveling with the team. So how's it been, you know, kind of doing it full-time now?
Well, it's actually, honestly, after doing things like the World Cup and going to the preseason games, again, like in Abu Dhabi and Madrid, everything's pretty easy in comparison, to be honest.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that must have been an amazing experience, like even outside of your job, just the life experience of it. It's always great to travel to, you know, different countries.
Yeah, it definitely was. I'd never been anywhere like either of those places, so it was definitely interesting. I thought it was very cool to go to the Burj Khalifa in Dubai and see the crazy view from there. That, like, stuff like that is, like, really interesting.
Yeah, that's wild. I've never actually been to Abu Dhabi or Madrid for that matter, so definitely shout out to you for making that trip.
I'm sitting here jealous as hell, that's for sure.
Yeah. But it's been crazy to – I'm just going to transition. But it's been crazy to see, like, how far the Mavs have really come, I think, since that preseason trip, because, you know, that was their first game since April of last year and first time seeing Luka since that infamous Chicago game where he played 5 minutes or whatever and went out. So, you know, I guess, like, where to start? The Mavs are 4-0 right now. They look, I would say, a hell of a lot better than they did at most points last season. Just at a high level, Grant, like, what do you think has stood out to you the most? It could be on the court. It could be in practice. But you're around the team pretty much every day. So what just stands out to you about this season?
Yeah, I think I'll start with, like, the performance aspect, like, on the court. I think the big thing so far has been just how hot of a shooting start the team's gotten off to. They've had some pretty, like, I guess you could say, overwhelming shooting stretches. Like, in Memphis, I think they had – I forgot how many they had in the first half or made threes, but it was, like, a massive, you know, margin in their favor. And, you know, guys like Tim Hardaway Jr., Grant Williams, and then Luka, aside from – I think that first game, especially against the Spurs, he didn't hit as many. Like, he wasn't as efficient, but those, like, the second and third game, he had, like, 15 combined threes. Like, when Luka's step back three is falling and all the spot-up players, or at least most of them, are converting at a high clip, it's just very daunting to basically have to keep pace. Because, honestly, if you have a lot of shooting around a guy who's going to create so many open looks like Luka and draw so much attention, like, and then you have the players that are going to knock them down. It's a very hard thing to combat as the opposition, because you, like, how many teams are equipped to create as many open shots on the other end, and then, you know, keep pace with the shot making. So that's, like, that's been a very interesting thing to follow. And then I think, you know, just Derek Lively's been very impressive. You know, I was always impressed with him since the summer league. You know, he seemed like he's a very coachable, very, like, you know, fast learner. And he's very mature. Like, you don't really think that he's like a 19-year-old whenever you're around him and talk to him and, you know, kind of just see him interact and practice and be a vocal leader. Like, that's another thing that stood out, is, like, from the start, being a vocal leader as a rookie. Like, anyone that you talk to about him, like, on the team or just, you know, other teams, like you just kind of get the sense that that's a very rare thing, the way he's doing it. So I think, you know, as he continues to learn, same with Grant Williams, learning the, you know, the principles and everything. I think seeing how the defense comes together will be interesting, kind of, you know, in conjunction with how the offense has already shown some impressive stuff.
Let me ask Grant a question. So first couple games, I think Mavs Twitter was kind of in flames about Derrick Jones Jr. starting games, and I think we got off to bad starts those first two games, at least on the scoreboard. What are your thoughts on him, like, last two games, and then kind of, like, where you see him the rest of the season and hopefully playoff time?
Yeah, I think entering the season, I definitely wanted to see how he would shoot from three. You know, I asked him, actually, like, I think before that Detroit preseason home game about his shot, like, kind of what went into his – I'm actually going to be writing about this soon, so I should have something either, like, probably tomorrow should be up. But he basically talked about how he's always had confidence in his shot. You know, anyone would say that, but, you know, I just thought it was interesting to hear that. And then, you know, see in the season, you know, he continued to reaffirm that and he got the results. He's been, you know, more aggressive taking open shots, knowing that that's going to be a demand of his role. And then, you know, the team, beyond all the things he's done offensively, whether it's like crashing the boards, leaking out in transition, or even his, you know, the success on the open threes that he's had, the team always praises his on-ball defense, taking on tough assignments as the top, you know, attribute that he brings to the table. So I think as long as those threes continue to convert at a strong clip where, you know, you don't end up having a situation where a team is shrinking the floor and those shots aren't falling, which, I mean, by all accounts so far, that's been the complete opposite. He's been converting at a high clip. There's a lot to like about what he brings to the table on both ends.
I'm glad you brought up the willingness to shoot, because in past years, I don't want to call it anyone, but DeLon Wright would pass up open shots, and I feel like it would kind of fumble up the offense a little bit, and just, like, you got to take the open shots when they're given to you, even if you're not on the floor for your shooting, and I'm glad you brought that up with Derrick Jones.
Yeah, it sounds like something he's, like, consistently mentioned is that, like, I guess it was probably an expectation when he joined, like, especially on a team with Luka, you're going to get a lot of open looks, and you got to be aggressive taking them. Or it kind of bogs things down, as you said. Like, it just creates situations where, you know, it kind of allows the defense to recover, and then it takes away the advantage that, you know, drawing two on the ball and then moving it around kind of creates. And, you know, just having more threats, I guess, when you look at the rest of the roster as well. Like, you know, Josh Green has had some moments, you know, especially late in that Memphis game where he was, like, spacing one pass away and, you know, either taking the catch-and-shoot shot or attacking the rim. You know, those types of floor spacing threats, continuing to have those around Luka, I think are very important, where it's like multifaceted, where it's not just about like one dimensional, like catch and shoot looks. Having the ability to pressure the defense by kind of like redriving and things like that, I think have also been something that has kind of, you know, stood out to that earlier question you asked about, you know, like the general like on court stuff. I think seeing like Grant Williams as well, there's been a couple of times where he's, you know, attacked a closeout and then gotten into a short range, like step back, playing through contact. And, you know, those are things that I think a lot of the floor spacing options in recent years haven't necessarily been capable of doing.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think the depth, you know, in the offseason on paper, the depth definitely seemed greater than it was last season. Obviously, games are won on the court and not on paper, but I think it's safe to say, at least in these first few games, the Mavs' depth is really showing. You know, like even last night, I mean, Luka had 18 points, but you saw Grant Williams had 25. Tim Hardaway had 24. Derrick Jones Jr. put up another good game. I think he had 17. And Lively, of course, had that great stat line too. So, I mean, is it safe to say that the depth is certainly maybe at another level compared to last year?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a I think a better collection of skill sets for sure, like especially on the wing. And I think, you know, Derek Lively kind of ties it together very nicely as well, where you have a lot of options that can punish a team for doing like what Chicago did, where they, you know, sent two on the ball and ball screen coverage and try to force the ball out of Luka's hands. You know, I think there's a lot more options out of that. And then I think another aspect as well is that they have more freedom to play out of things like, you know, double drag screens. Knowing that they have more of a threat to put the ball on the floor or take a more aggressive shot involving, you know, one of the shooting threats that they have. Because I think even just like in, I guess like you could say like switch hunting situations, I think like this year a lot of times it's been like Tim Hardaway and then, you know, Josh Green some as well. I think you fear more of the potential of the screener than you would like Reggie Bullock in recent years. Like if the shot's open, he would take it. But a lot of times that would end up becoming almost like a get action, which you want more of a threat from the screener than kind of just giving the ball back to Luka whenever there's like a switch and a recovery. So I think there's just more layers to their attack, I feel like. And, you know, it's been interesting because Kyrie, you know, he didn't play like shoot the ball well in the first two games, and then he's been out for the last two. So just kind of seeing what it looks like when he's converting at a high level on his shot attempts, as you would, you know, normally expect as someone who's been a 50-40-90 player in his career and one of the highly efficient scorers, especially from all three levels. That's fascinating to think about. And then them, even something that Kyrie mentioned, was expanding on the 3-1 pick and rolls where, you know, like him, like they're getting like into, you know, ball screening actions together, inverted pick and roll, stuff like that. Like they haven't really gotten into that too much with the lack of availability yet with Kyrie so far. So I think just seeing how they continue to add layers, having time to kind of experiment and build continuity together, unlike last year where you're kind of just throwing together a, I guess you could say, a midseason trade in high stakes situations, trying to do like must win games when other teams have kind of already been together for a little while. So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops.
I want to ask you all two a question. I'll let Jay go first and Grant take it after that. But from where you thought the Mavericks are going to be before the season started, and then it's only been four games, which is, I think Jay said, 5% of the season. How have your expectations changed? Have they stayed the same? Elaborate.
I definitely think they've exceeded my expectations overall because, you know, I thought with a long trip, 12 days, that was actually an unprecedented. I don't think there's been a longer preseason sort of journey for a team, like internationally. So I was very curious. When I kind of watch things, I don't have like a preconceived like kind of opinion on like what's going to happen. I kind of like to analyze what does happen and then, you know, kind of go from there. So I wasn't expecting like a bad result from that trip where it'd be like jet lag and then like a lack of chemistry, things like that. But I was curious to see how it would unfold. And I think, you know, obviously starting 4-0 is, you know, I guess you could say a fantastic start regardless, but especially when you factor in, you know, some of the, you know, the teams that have typically started slow after those sort of international preseason games. So I think they've definitely way beyond exceeded my expectations through four games. Now, I'm very curious to see how they handle a road game against Denver. That'll be like, I guess you could say, the ultimate litmus test because they just really don't lose at home when Jokic plays. I was looking at the stat. I forgot the exact stat, but it was like, it was pretty absurd, like their record since the start of last season, including the finals run, where they're like 48-5 or something ridiculous, or 54-5 or something obnoxious in those situations. So, you know, just if you got a lot of momentum carrying into a game like that, seeing how it translates will be, you know, fascinating for sure.
Yeah, kind of like Grant said, I honestly expected the Mavericks to get off to a slower start, especially seeing how disjointed they looked in the international games. But at the same time, I always felt that the travel and just like the disruption of the schedule really factored into why they didn't look so good in the preseason. That being said, I was optimistic about them getting off to a faster start. But to be 4-0 right now, the only undefeated team in the West, that's definitely not something that I had on my bingo card. And I think, like you said, the game at Denver is going to be the ultimate test. I think, you know, that very well could be a lot for the Mavs. I'm more curious to see how they play in that game as opposed to do they win. I mean, if they win, you know, I'm going to be pushing all kinds of agendas. But I think I want to see them compete in that game because, you know, we have seen the Mavericks actually play pretty well in Denver in recent years. Obviously not, like, too much in recent memory. I do believe they won one game in Denver last year by 1 point. And then I think you have to go back to Rick Carlisle's last season in Dallas where they won a couple games there. But I'm curious to see at least if they can keep it close. And obviously Kyrie's availability, I think, is a big one because, I mean, if he doesn't play against Denver, it's a little bit difficult to see the Mavs pulling it out. But never say never with Luka.
I also think that Maxi Kleber injury that happened, I guess, yesterday where he dislocated his pinky toe, which doesn't sound fun whatsoever. He's questionable for tomorrow, but that doesn't sound like he's going to play tomorrow, I would think. But I don't know. I've never dislocated my pinky toe. But he's a big – he's an important player for when you go up against guys like Jokic because, I mean, I guess – I'm guessing Kidd's strategy is going to be throw Lively Powell and Maxi at him. And I know Maxi's been not even – he's been a pretty disappointing this year, but that's a pretty big injury going into tomorrow too, along with Kyrie, obviously. And he hasn't shot well, but it's still Kyrie Irving at the end of the day.
Yeah, Grant, I know you spoke to Kyrie yesterday before the game, I think. Do you get any sense about where he's at with his injury recovery?
No, I don't think there's like any sort of like sense of a timeline, but just that it's improving. And just, kind of the typical stuff of, like, he's doing what he's supposed to do with the training staff, all that sort of thing. But, you know, I did find it interesting that he, you know, mentioned continuing to be a, you know, like, it's important for him to continue to be a very good teammate with everyone else to build chemistry and continuity early in the season. And there's a lot of things from, like, that conversation that you can read on DallasBasketball.com for sure. Not to, like, go into my own article.
No, plug it.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of interesting things. I thought it was one of the interesting things I thought was, you know, him talking about, like, the growth Luka has experienced so far this season defensively. You know, he mentioned, like, you know, like, this part of his career, he sees him kind of taking that next step on that end. And, you know, some of those late game situations, I feel like he's, you know, really geared up to get stops, you know, handling some, I guess you could say also tougher assignments as well. Like he forced that turnover late against Chicago, and just in general, he's held his own in space. I thought that's been intriguing to see. And, you know, getting his thought on that was cool. And, you know, just one thing about I was thinking overall with the Nuggets that just kind of popped in my head. Last year after, I think that February, was it 15th, something like that, where it was like the last game before the All-Star break, they played in Denver. I think something that I'm very curious to see this go around is just the difference in having more size, because they were extremely undersized, 3 through 5 in that game. I think it was like, you know, Powell at the 5 versus Jokic, and then they had like undersized wings with, I think, Reggie Bullock playing the 4, and, you know, Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. had size advantages, like pretty substantial ones. Like when you see it in person, it's very, very staggering, or it was. So, you know, just seeing how Derek Lively handles that, you know, that's an obvious one, will be interesting. But just overall, you know, having Grant Williams in the mix as well, and then having more athleticism to push the pace. I think another factor as well is there's been a lot of talk about the intent to come into the season in shape and play fast. Seeing how that helps a team while playing on the road in Denver, you know, in the Mile High City with the altitude and everything, I think that would be another factor to kind of watch and see how it pays off for him.
Yeah, I didn't mention Grant when I brought up Dwight, Maxie, Lively on the guys that Kidd's probably going to put on Jokic. But, yeah, I think Grant's going to be on him a few times tomorrow too, just because he's one of the strongest players on the team. I'm surprised. I can't believe how strong that dude is. Like, people do not move him at all when they try to go at him. Quick question for both of y'all. Where do y'all see – let's start with Jay. Where do y'all see, I guess, the defense kind of ending up at the end of the season, ranking-wise?
I think – I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to say league average, like 15 – I don't know if that's optimistic, but I think given how this roster is constructed at the present moment, I think that's an optimistic prediction. I believe they're 19th right now, at around 111 per 100 possessions. And the reason I say that is just because I actually like a lot of what the Mavs have been doing on defense this season. And we all know the impact that Derek Lively has had, of course, but even in last night's game, just the perimeter rotations are just so much harder in the half court. Like, their half court defense is notably improved, and I think that if you look at the numbers also, it backs that up too. Transition defense is something that they're still working on, and they're definitely prone to giving up, you know, these big runs or one big quarter per game, like Jason Kidd said after the Memphis game. So that's something that if they can cut that out, I feel like league average and possibly even higher than that is something that they could do. But obviously health and you know, whatever trade that they might make down the road will also impact that as well.
Grant, where do you think the defense? You don't have to give a ranking, I guess. We're not complete dorks over here, but I'm just kidding. Where do you see, I guess, the defensive ceiling for this Mavericks team with the current roster, assuming they don't make any trades, which I'm guessing they'll make a couple or one?
Yeah, I definitely think overall I'm very interested to see how it develops because, you know, Derek Lively is facing a lot of players for the first time, and it's not going to be later until the year when he sees, like, I guess you could say in preseason he saw, you know, Minnesota twice in a row with the two star bigs they have. You know, he mentioned the physicality was an adjustment, and after the first game, and then seeing him respond the second game, that kind of gives a good indicator of how he'll handle facing, you know, the same players multiple times, like, as the season develops. So I think, you know, with him being a fast learner and everything, and then him, you know, taking his job very seriously to understand the schemes, I think that really elevates their potential. I think he's going to help them be ahead of schedule in that regard. And I think Grant Williams, an underrated part about his potential with the overall, like, defensive unit is that he's also still learning as well. And when you have the two most important communication roles, the four and the five, who handle a lot of the backline defensive responsibilities, both being new to a team, it takes time for them to not only build continuity, understanding each other's capabilities, but it also takes time for them to fully, like, understand and maximize within the system that they're in now. Like, there's different terminologies, there's different things to communicate, and actually that's something that both of them mentioned. I talked to them over the last couple of games, like before the games, and each of them kind of mentioned that as well, like, where they're like Grant Williams mentioned he needs to be a better leader, communicator to Derek Lively to help him out, but that will come as he continues to learn and become more comfortable in the defensive scheme. And so I think with those guys being viewed as leaders for the defense as well, like in those roles, that's an important factor to kind of monitor throughout the season. And I think that will be like having the general, I guess you could say, roles filled with the proper, I guess you say, physical intangibles goes a long way as well, because they didn't have that 7'1", you know, long rim protector last year with athleticism that can kind of handle a lot of different responsibilities and matchups. And they also didn't have, after the Kyrie Irving trade, size at the four to be able to handle bigger matchups. So I think that alone really elevates their overall ceiling. And I think it's hard to just give a ranking in general because there's so many stretches in a season where key players are out, to be honest. Like, for all we know, like, one of those guys could miss time, and then all of a sudden that might really impact their overall potential for defensive rating. But I do think I do like their overall potential as a group, especially when you factor in the players on the wing. Like, Derek Jones provides a lot of versatility and athleticism. You know, you would also like to see, you know, Josh Green continue to grow as he has a goal of taking a bigger defensive presence as an on-ball defender like he did with Australia during the FIBA World Cup. And also, you know, Dante Exum can also provide size and, you know, really be competitive guarding. And Luka has also shown continued improvement defensively as well in these last couple games, like with the start of the season and those late game situations, as we talked about. So there's a lot to think about with their defense overall. And even beyond just Grant Williams and Derek Lively being new, everyone as a unit has to get used to each other as well. So just seeing that develop, I think will definitely result in greater potential than I think far greater potential than they had last year. And that's not really saying much because they finished like 25th. defensive rating. So I think your league average, sort of, I guess you could say, measure or prediction, I think that's a healthy one. I don't think it's very hard for me to give one, but I think that's a very realistic goal for sure.
Yeah, because even in the game yesterday against Chicago, I felt that they cleaned up a lot of stuff defensively that, maybe it's just confirmation bias based on the score and stuff, but it felt like they cleaned up a lot of, you know, defensive mistakes that they had been making in the previous games, notably like going under a lot of the ball screens and allowing for, you know, open three-pointers. I mean, I know Javon Carter got a few of them, but beyond that, it felt like, you know, Josh Green and Derrick Jones Jr. were being a lot more aggressive navigating those screens. And as a result, like, Zach LaVine had that, you know, that stretch of like three straight threes in the second quarter. After that, they held him to 5 points for the rest of the game. And you know, Zach LaVine is probably their biggest offensive threat. You know, they kept DeMar DeRozan off the free throw line, and he's a guy that's had a history of, you know, drawing a lot of free throws against the Mavs and other teams too. So I don't know if that was just a one-time thing, but perhaps they really are putting a lot of focus during games. And I think, like you said, having guys like Grant Williams and Derek Lively being the talkers on the floor and setting the tone defensively in the locker room as well has really changed the way that the product looks on the court.
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely takes time for all that to develop as well. I think that's why it's very valuable to have kind of the team, like for the most part, the team that you want to have to close the season. You know, like obviously there could be a trade or two, whatever, like in terms of like how a team like makes some supporting cast changes. But the general like core of it, having that from the start, even if there's injuries in training camp, that's why it's so important to have that to kind of build that continuity together. And, you know, just interesting to see how, you know, that, you know, tracks throughout the whole season for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, tomorrow's game is going to be pretty tough. I mean, honestly, you look at Charlotte and Orlando back-to-back on Sunday too, and, you know, of course you see those two teams and kind of scoff, but obviously we know what happened with Charlotte last year, and Orlando's been playing pretty well too this season. So I think November is going to be a pretty interesting month for the Mavs, but if they can come out of this on top, I feel like that'll tell us a lot about where they might be headed, you know, as the season goes on. It's still early, in other words, so I think draw too many definitive conclusions about them, but I'm optimistic based on what I've seen in these small sample
sizes. You're telling me I can't pre-order NBA Finals tickets? Why are you laughing?
What would your parade route be? Would it be the same as 2011? Is that the kind of conversations you guys are having?
I would for sure not put that shit in Arlington. Sorry for cursing. I would not put that in Arlington. That's for damn sure.
Did you go to the 2011 parade, Vinay?
No, I didn't.
Okay,
too damn hot.
Yeah,
in hindsight, I guess I wish I went though, because I didn't know it was going to be a 12-year drought, and I'm not going to go to the parade tomorrow. But yeah,
there'll be one soon.
Grant, I want to ask you quickly about kind of the bench guard rotation with Hardy, Exum, and Curry. I feel like every game, one of those three guys are going to get squeezed out. What do you kind of think about each of those three players, like in their current stages of their careers and on this team for this year?
Yeah, I think with the expectation being to win now, I think the goal was to bring in some veteran players. I think, you know, obviously they did that with Dante Exum, Seth Curry. You know, Seth's very familiar with the team overall, multiple stints, played with Luka, and he's also, it wasn't a lot of games, but played with Kyrie in the past with the Nets. So I think, you know, obviously like I don't think he's played up to obviously a usual standard so far, but, you know, I think anytime you can add a top level shooter like that, it definitely, you know, goes a long way for depth. And, you know, I think Dante Exum, just with the size that he brings and then being able to push the ball and be another playmaker, you know, that kind of gave them a different option than they had last year. Because if you think about it at this time, or not even this time, a little bit later, I think we were talking about like players like Campazzo and Kemba Walker. And I think there's just a lot of different, you know, a lot better options for this stage, you know, in comparison, obviously. And then, you know, Jaden Hardy factoring into it, I think overall he's continuing to focus on developing, you know, kind of like his ability to play within the flow, maximize his shot selection, get his teammates involved, his off-ball defensive awareness. I think all the same things that he kind of talked about and emphasized in Summer League and the team wanted him to, you know, like really focus on then. I think, you know, those remain focuses. And I think they just have more options to be able to throw out there when they want veteran looks and also just depending on matchups. So I think it's not going to be like one of those things, and I guess if I had to guess, where it's like a set like sort of choice every single night throughout the whole season. I think they just have a lot of different options right now to kind of play through. And then as they see progression perhaps from Jaden Hardy, maybe he can, you know, take opportunity or playing time and maximize opportunity, you know, during different pockets of the season. And I think he, you know, he did do well, like, in some clutch moments yesterday's game. It's crazy. It's hard to remember the time whenever I'm like going into the airport in the morning, and I'm like, wait, that was yesterday. In that game, in the game against Chicago, he has some pretty big clutch moments. So those types of moments go a long way. And, you know, overall, I think it's going to be an evolving thing. It's impossible to give a great answer because I don't think they have a great answer. But I do remember, entering the season, Jason Kidd emphasized Dante Exum as someone they're going to lean on early in the season, as well as Derek Jones. So I think those are he would probably be an important name to keep an eye on as a result. And I think it would probably evolve, as it goes on from there.
That's the tough part about being a team that's winning now is, some young guys like Hardy, I think, is a player that needs to just kind of play to kind of get a rhythm for the game and whatnot. Sometimes, he can have a bad minute stretch with a bad shot and Kidd pulls him immediately. And it's just kind of, with the way he plays, just kind of tough for him to get into a rhythm and whatnot. And, having, like I said, being a win-now team, Omax I don't think he's played a minute yet this year. And he was a guy that we thought might be a little bit of a factor in the rotation. So, going to be interesting to see how they develop these young guys going forward. Because I'm a big believer for any sport that you got to play games to kind of get experience. There's nothing like you can do all the stuff you want in practice, development, and that stuff's important. But real game reps are, I think, the most important part of developing. And it's going to be challenging, I think, for the Mavericks to get these guys valuable experience while they're trying to get the best playoff seating.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll sort of like – as you said, I think there definitely is that sort of balance that you have to find. And I think last year it was interesting to think about because, with Hardy, I know the roster is different this year, but when he starts the season with the Texas Legends, that's fine as you acclimate, to the professional level, even though, he spent that season in the G League, he was able to show his progression. But overall, I think when you don't maximize the development opportunities, you do run a risk of if later on the veterans that you did sign aren't the options you thought they were. There's situations where if like Kyrie's injured or Luka's injured, they're relying on Jaden Hardy in a much greater capacity, and you would hope that you didn't stunt the readiness in those situations. Because like last year, again, it's a different roster this year, but last year, with he went from a DNP one night, Luka got hurt in New Orleans and he had to close the fourth quarter for him. And then Kyrie was out before they played in Memphis their next game. So both Luka and Kyrie were out. And then all of a sudden Jaden Hardy was like the top offensive option, taking like 22 shots. And then he took like a total of 60 plus shots in like a 3-game span. So like if the hierarchy that you set is like, if Luka or Kyrie are out, we need to rely on Jaden Hardy as a significantly greater used creator. I think it's challenging to go from no playing time or very minimal playing time to then being like, okay, here are the keys to the offense. Please help us in the high stakes game. Like, I think that's the type of balance that you have to find between like the development and immediate results with like the veterans that you may. Like it's hard to put words in someone's mouth about like trust or whatever, but you know what I mean? Like naturally coaching staffs tend to trust the veterans more than like the 21-year-old. So I guess that would be a decent word to use. Like, so overall it's like that fine balance kind of has to be established.
Yeah. I just got a quick thought on the guard rotation. I think you made a lot of good points there, Grant. I definitely feel like right now, like outside of Luka and Kyrie, there's a competition, I guess, to see who can kind of emerge. And, Dante Exum brings like a unique skill set, right? Like he's more of a wing. I mean, he's a guard, but he's got the size of a wing and can handle the ball. And they like his length and his ability to push, like you talked about. I looked it up right now because I felt like the eye test was telling me that he was a good rebounder. And actually, per 36 minutes, he's averaging 9 rebounds per game. So I think that's definitely something that he brings that, guys like Seth Curry and Jaden Hardy don't. I think with Jaden Hardy, we know at this point that he can score. And in this offense especially, I think after a rough shooting start to his NBA career, he really came along last year. And even last night, we saw him hit that three-pointer. We saw him make a confident move to the basket. Scoring is not the problem for him. I think what will really make him emerge in the rotation is his playmaking ability. And I thought last night he showed some of that. Like, he had that nice pass to Dwight Powell under the basket. And I forget now if Dwight Powell finished that or he got free throws. But essentially, that was one of the first times, I think, in a while that I've seen Jaden Hardy make the right play that wasn't taking the shot.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that. And I think, as funny as this sounds, I firmly believe this. I think if the playoffs started tomorrow, I think Exum would play more than he has so far. I just kind of think in the playoff setting, like, Jason Kidd would trust that type of archetype against the best of the best in the West playoffs. We kind of saw it in the
Suns. I love Doncic.
Me too. I think in the playoffs last year, a couple of years ago, against the Suns, when Jason Kidd put in Frank to kind of stifle Booker, and I thought Frank did a good job on Booker. I could see Exum playing that kind of role, and honestly, even more than that, because I think he's a better player than Frank was here.
Yeah, he's definitely a more versatile player than Frank was. I think the issue with Frank is he never developed guard skills, whereas Dante Exum from the start of his career was a guard. And, he's talked about how Dennis Lindsay challenged him to be better defensively. And I think now you're seeing some of that. I mean, I think he's averaging 7 minutes per game right now. But whatever those 7 minutes are, I feel like his impact is really felt. And the most impressive thing to me has just been his ability to push the ball in transition off a rebound. We've seen it a couple times, him going coast to coast. I think he had the dunk on a coast to coast finish in the Brooklyn game. So I really like him a lot. And it'll be interesting to see what happens between Hardy and Curry. I think Curry looks a little bit old to start the season. We'll see if he can get his legs underneath him. And Tim Hardaway Jr., we know, is going to play a lot of minutes, not only because of his contract, but also because we know what he adds to the team, even though he has some frustrating moments every now and then.
Tim is a reckless shot chucker sometimes, but he is, I don't care what anyone says, valuable to this team just because, like you said, he's one of the best shot makers in the league, like, or just shooting wise, one of the best shooters in the league, off volume and all the stuff that he takes. I mean, his lift that he gets on the shot, there's not a shot that he doesn't hate, and that's a good and a bad thing, as we see. But I hope he wasn't there for that Western Conference Finals run because of injury, but if we make the playoffs, he's going to be a significant factor in however far they go, good or bad.
Yeah, I think the issue with Tim is more when he puts the ball on the floor. That's when he's not as good. But shooting-wise, he's as solid as they come.
Yeah. Quick thoughts on both of y'all. On Derek Lively, I just want to get your – I mean, we've touched on it a little bit, but just kind of want to get your opinions on Derek Lively. And I don't know. I have unrealistic expectations for how good that guy's going to be when he reaches 23, 24 years old. Because the passing, like, I know yesterday was – kind of the first game where he showed off the passing like that, but that type of archetype and a pick and roll big that can anchor the defense and he can potentially pass like that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I thought it was an intriguing game because, you know, at Duke he showed it's challenging to be a vertical lob threat that gets maximized in like high pick and roll, like spaced out situations when you're playing college basketball. But I think
Not to cut you off, but he was also playing next to another 7-footer at Duke last year, so he didn't really have that NBA spacing. But yeah, go ahead.
Exactly. So when you don't have it and that's the ideal like setting for you in that sort of role, I think it definitely like kind of diminishes what you can necessarily put up in terms of counting stats, but also just like the way you can make an imprint on the game. I think what we've seen through four games, even just having that role, like role gravity or presence, kind of opens up shooters and, just the offense as a whole, especially when they're using, it's sort of like creative, double drag screens, things like that. I think, you just are a more imposing threat for the team, the opposition having to make those like switching decisions, like their timing, everything like that, all the factors that go into executing. And I think overall, with him, something that's really impressed me is just how often he gets a hand on the ball when he's crashing the offensive boards. I think, especially it's easy to say that after he gets 7 offensive rebounds in a game, but that's just something that, like, even when he wasn't coming with offensive rebounds, how often he's at least getting a hand on the ball and, like, slowing up the other team's push. and allowing the defense to at least get a split second or a second, you know, like his unit to be able to get back and get a better position. You know, those types of little things can add up. And I think, you know, back to the short rolling point, I think that was like that first game, like as we talked about earlier, where the defense was really, really aggressively trying to force the, you know, the 4-on-3s with blitzing and ball screen coverage against Luka, especially because, you know, Kyrie wasn't on the floor. So you don't really want to, or you feel more empowered as opposing team to be able to get away with that type of approach without a player like, you know, Kyrie available to play. But I think he made the most of those short roll passing reads. And I think it was even really interesting to see him make a drop-off pass, like with Derrick Jones being an active cutter. And that was something that, you know, when I was analyzing how they attacked 4-on-3s last year, they relied, I think, very heavily on the, you know, the catch and shoot, live and die by the three. And, you know, at times when I asked about it, I was kind of trying to hit at like the whole like other teams, you know, at different levels. Like you can play out of like cuts and, you know, get into other stuff and have the, you know, the short roller be an aggressive attacker if it's open. So I think this roster right now has more options with you know, better athleticism to make those cuts and be a factor on the finish, but then also be able to attack closeouts on the, you know, the drives off the catch. And I think there's a little bit more of a willingness to take, you know, some of those contested shots as well. And when you have all those factors kind of going, you know, instead of having like the opening night roster of last year where you had like Reggie Bullock, Dorian Finney-Smith, and JaVale McGee as the 3 through 5 and, you know, personnel like that, I think you just have more options to keep the defense honest and make them pay for how they're trying to get the ball to Luka's hands. And I mean, I also like to add on that last point, like just tying in all of it, when the team is healthy, you know, having Kyrie available, that's where it really like kind of breaks the defense as well, because it's just very hard to play the matchup game whenever you have, you know, an elite pick and roll creator and isolation scorer, just general offensive talent on the floor as well, when you're trying to play such an aggressive approach against like just one player like Luka.
Yeah, I thought that was a great breakdown of Lively. I mean, honestly, like I've been through a journey with Derek Lively in the sense of how I've felt about him at the various stages from the pre-draft process to now. Going into the draft, he was someone I felt that the Mavs would have been reaching for if they used the 10th pick to pick him. But then as I saw him progress in summer league, I realized that he was getting better every single game. I watched his first game in person, and in that game he looked very raw. But then watching the rest of it on TV and just seeing him contribute more and more every game, looking more polished, knowing his spots on the floor on defense, not forcing shots on offense near the rim, that type of maturity really stood out to me. And then watching him in the preseason after, you know, the 2 months after summer league and just the work that he put in, he looked even better. And he looked like a real NBA player at that point. And a guy where I felt like he very well could start for the Mavs, because he has one skill that no one else on this team has, and that's being 7 feet tall. But you combine that with his basketball instincts, he's so polished for a 19-year-old. And like you were saying, like just his ability to facilitate in the half court on these dribble handoffs. And I know Luka kind of, you know, laughed at you when you asked him about playmaking, but I think what you were asking made a lot of sense. Like what Derek Lively does.
The way I worded it was awful. I should have asked to
completely what you were saying.
But yeah, for sure. The general premise was like overall playmaking, and then like, you know, we're already seeing, you know, more handoffs, things like that. I was going to tie in more, but then, yeah. It didn't end very well.
He's not a traditional playmaker, but I knew exactly what you were asking. He's a facilitator on the floor. Like just his ability to time screens and also time dives the basket off the handoffs, I think is way ahead of where I would have expected any rookie big man to be. And that was one of my major hesitations with Lively going into the draft, was just like, you know, after seeing what the Warriors went through with James Wiseman, and of course, different player, different situation. But my main takeaway from that is like big men can take a long time to develop. And I just felt that the Mavs didn't have that kind of time. Clearly, I was wrong, and I'm never been more glad to be wrong about something. And I mean, right now, like, it really feels like the sky is the limit, like, not only in his career, but like this year too. And so I just hope and pray that he stays healthy and continues to improve, because I think we talked about it too, in our preseason podcast. And it's just like, Derek Lively was the X factor for this team going into the season. Because if he ended up being a starting quality player for them, like, that was something they didn't have last year. That was something they didn't have in the Western Conference final season the year before. You know, Derek Lively looks like a player with the basketball instincts of Dwight Powell, who I believe has good basketball instincts, but then has all that, you know, natural talent and athleticism that Dwight Powell, no disrespect to him, doesn't quite possess. So I think that's really exciting to see. And, you know, if he can stay out of foul trouble, I think we're going to be winning a lot more games.
Is the athleticism in the wingspans a huge thing, difference between the two guys? Like, if Dwight Powell had, like, I don't know, not T-Rex arms, not to insult him, but if he didn't have T-Rex arms, he'd be easily a starting caliber center in the NBA. Quick point on Derek Lively, because y'all broke it down beautifully. I thought it was super impressive that he played 33 minutes yesterday. Didn't really look tired from any stretch that I saw. Like, for a big man to do that with the hustle that he was bringing, I thought that was just super, super impressive.
Jason Kidd actually talked about that too after the game. He said that it's very helpful to them to have a player like Lively who can play in the whole quarter like he did. The whole fourth quarter, I believe, he played. Correct me if I'm wrong, Grant.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's funny. We all thought that Omax Prosper was going to be the guy who had the immediate impact, but that kind of flipped somewhere between summer league and training camp. But, wow, I really could not have imagined Derek Lively to be in this point, but it's great to see.
One thing that I think I should mention that's been very impressive about, you know, Derek from the start, even the time he made his call to reporters on draft night, something that's very, like you mentioned the James Wiseman thing, and not singling him out in particular, but just like young big men in general, or just even just rookies entering the NBA. A big difference, I feel like, between a lot of them and Derek Lively is that he knew his job from day one, and he took it very seriously. Like, even on the call before he even got on the plane to come to Dallas, he said he knew his job was going to be to do the dirty work. You know, be the screen and roll big, set great screens, do all this stuff and develop that way. That it's not very common that, like, a lottery pick already knows their job and embraces it from day one. And it's just interesting because it's like, even like through summer league, before it started, like the preparation process throughout summer league, and then, you know, training camp with the Mavs, everything along the way, you know, he's continued to fully, like, embrace doing the dirty work, knowing his role. And I think that really helps the developmental process when you have that mindset from day one. You just attack every day to get better and what you need to get better at, as opposed to kind of just entering the NBA, not really knowing what your job is, what your expectations are, and kind of just hoping you figure it out. I think that's a huge factor to me. And I think even just one of the examples of how he's improved, I think, you know, I remember seeing him working on his finishing touch, you know, with Tyson Chandler, like, in July, and they've been doing that for a very long time. And I think he's made some strides in that regard, because that was something that even when I remember analyzing his film at Duke that he needed to improve at, and it's still an ongoing process. Like, we're not going to act like four games into the regular season. It's been this, like, crazy insurmountable period of development opportunity. But still, there's been progress made. And I think just knowing, like being humble about it and, like, knowing, like, yeah, I do need to get better at finishing touch. And I'm going to work with – I have the luxury of working with, you know, a former champion who was great in a role that I'm going to be playing in, like, embracing that. I think that goes a long way, because there are some young players, like, just around the league in general that you see, like, failure stories of, or – just, you know, things in general that of negative outcomes, and they just, I think a lot of the patterns is that they didn't have that mindset and embrace that and continue to build in what they were expected to do.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Really glad you mentioned it, actually, because, you know, the thing about a lot of these lottery picks, and especially the guys who are one and done, is everyone were alphas, like in high school. Like, they were the best player on their high school team, most likely. I mean, like, what people don't realize is the role players in the NBA at one point were, you know, the best player in their state, in their city, in high school, possibly in college. But the reality is you only have, like, maybe 15 or 20 of those alpha spots in the NBA. Everyone else has got to play a role and be willing to play that role if you want to win. And we've seen examples of players like Christian Wood, and I don't want to harp on him too much, but he's just the poster child for it at this point. Like, guys who have all the talent in the world but refuse to accept their roles. And it's the reason why, you know, there's even more disappointing stories than Christian Wood. Guys who came into the league with a lot of potential that just don't pan out because they refuse to accept that they're not the alpha anymore and can't figure out how to fit into the role. So seeing Derek Lively embrace that from day one was extremely impressive. Like, I really have no words to describe it other than that. And, you know, that mindset has carried over into the season. It's only been four games, but I really do like where he is in his developmental process. I think both basketball-wise and just mentally. Vinay, you got anything? Or I don't know if I have anything more on my mind.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. Big Derek Lively fan. That's all I have to say right now. I'm excited to see where it develops for the rest of the year because, I mean, I think I tweeted off the account yesterday. I mean, unfortunately or unfortunately, however you want to take it, like, he is one of the most important players on this team, and right now this team's 4-0, and they have playoff aspirations. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles all that. He's done a terrific job handling it, and, I mean, his maturity is off the charts. I don't know the guy personally. I've just seen him in a few interviews, but he just seems off the chart maturity-wise for his age. I mean, I was definitely not like that at 19. I'm not even like that at 26, so.
Yeah, he's different. But we're so thankful that he's a Mav. And I don't know. Grant, you have any closing thoughts? I think we're pretty much out of questions for you. Really appreciate it.
I think one more thing about Derek Lively that's been, I guess, game to game, like early on in his rookie year, that's been impressive is just, I think if you think about the Memphis game, he got into foul trouble very early and stayed in foul trouble. And, you know, I think just seeing how he responded the following game by avoiding foul trouble against the skilled big like Vucevic and handling switching assignments as well, you know, in some important moments against some really, like, talented players on the Bulls and not getting into foul trouble, I think that was, you know, an important thing to see, you know, game by game. And then also building on, like, kind of having a bounce-back performance where he put up career-high numbers. Again, like, career-high numbers, like, they're impressive numbers regardless, but career-high numbers, it's not like this, like, huge thing where it's like he's in year four and he's putting up career-high numbers. But still, it was an impressive bounce-back performance. So I think that just kind of speaks to the, I guess you could say the seriousness of his that he takes or carries with his job. And you can kind of see that. And that's not really common for someone who's 19 years old adjusting to the NBA.
It's going to be not common at all. It's going to be so annoying when the crafty Jokic gets him in foul trouble early tomorrow. But, hey, that's part of the learning experience.
Hey, but do you remember when we had Willie Cauley-Stein and somehow Willie Cauley-Stein was, like, actually really good at defending Jokic?
Yeah, no, I do remember that. That was weird, and I don't think it would happen again if they tried again, because where's Willie Cauley-Stein nowadays?
Well, Willie Cauley-Stein doesn't want to try it again. He doesn't want to be in the NBA, so it's all good.
Yeah. Hopefully he's happy doing what he's doing. He seems like a lovely guy.
He does.
But Grant, but yeah, Grant, time, thanks for joining us, man. I know you're busy. Enjoy Denver. Don't enjoy it too much, if you know what I mean. But hopefully we can have you on Spaces soon again. But really appreciate your insight. You should check out Grant's work on DallasBasketball.com if you like reading. Even if you don't like reading, you should still read it. So, yeah, thanks again, Grant.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoy the conversation. I look forward to talking about the Mavs again in the future.
Yeah, appreciate it, Grant. You're the man. I always love hearing your insight and hope to have you on here soon. Have a great weekend in Denver. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, have a great weekend yourselves. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, everyone else, for tuning in. We'll be back soon with another podcast or Spaces. Appreciate your support. See you later. Go Mavs.